or. He wasn't sure if this all added up. He was frequently subject to delusional thought patterns, but maybe he was onto something. He couldn't lie here all day and wait to find out. Roland had to locate a way into the warehouse before it was too late. He stared at the countdown ticking away on the front screen of his phone and sighed. 4 until the end. Seeing the time slipping and the looming chain-link fence around the property, Roland thought about the new truck waiting for him nearby. He could keep driving, head north this time. The roads would be quiet. He could head into Canada. By his estimations, northern Manitoba was as safe a zone as he could find, as long as he didn't mind the cold. Before he could consider this, his attention was taken away by a buzzing sound, faint at first, but increasing with each passing breath. He fumbled for the binoculars and wiped the lenses before placing his eyes against the cold, damp metal. It was a drone, hovering high. He almost panicked, thinking it was heading straight for his hiding spot, but it veered to the right, moving for the fence line. Something was happening. Another half dozen of the compact flying drones were released from outside the warehouse, each moving toward the perimeter, and they traveled in a circle, covering the base with eyes and presumably ears. Things had become interesting. Roland fought the urge to retreat to the truck. He'd ventured this far, and he was so close to learning the truth. His phone was placed beside him, and it vibrated as a notification alerted him of a message. He broke his gaze from the warehouse and saw it was a message from his website, Digital Wizardry. He must have forgotten to shut it off in his rush to escape L.A. The subject line read, "Missing daughter, need your help." He opened it, only to find the ramblings of a man searching for his abducted daughter. Roland thought about the news articles he'd seen about the hundreds of people across the country going missing in the weeks before the evacuation. The man also said he had a laptop that might contain her whereabouts, but it was locked. Roland was about to decline when the massive bulk carrier arrived, peeking over the horizon. Roland's heart nearly stopped as the immense ship cut through the waves, making its way toward the pier. 4 white cranes stood up like omens along the center of the flat surface, and Roland watched in morbid fascination as it came to a halt about 100 meters off the shore. The entire process had taken half an hour, and his bladder was threatening to burst by the time he finally set the binoculars down. He slowly moved, staying behind the tree cover, and when he was done relieving himself, he returned to his hiding spot to see the unexpected. Zodiacs were racing out from the container ship, with a rising roar of outboard motors, and Roland's hand shook as he noticed the guards inside them holding guns. AR-15s, if his eyesight was accurate. The Zodiacs disappeared around the water-facing end of the warehouse, and then he heard the motors start up again. The boats were crowded and heavily laden now, with at least 15 people aboard each of them. The passengers looked to be a diverse group, teens, a couple of kids, but mostly adults of varying ages and races. Then it all became clear. These were the missing people. Who else was being herded from a warehouse owned by Hound 4 days before doomsday? He was creating a safe haven, a place to start over from, or else Roland was totally off base. He really wasn't sure. He thought back to the email from the freaked-out father about his girl, and he scanned the people on those boats. They were farther away, but he thought there were a couple of women that could be teenagers on one of them. He brought up the email again and saw the man had used an alias. That would be easy enough to track. Roland opened an app he'd created on his phone and tracked the man's IP. It belonged to an Andrew Miller. His thumbs quickly flashed over the screen, and seconds later he was in the State of California database. Mr. Miller appeared to be an ex-Marine. He was divorced and had 3 moving violations over the last 5 years and 4 parking tickets. He'd also recently been arrested a few days ago for shooting a firearm. Roland stared at the man's image and found himself shivering at the cold, angry eyes. This was who he needed to help him. There was no way Roland was going into that warehouse alone, not after seeing those drones and armed guards. But this? Andrew Miller was the ticket. He replied to the email, telling the man to bring the laptop to Cape Town. He passed his cell phone number on to the guy. Even if Andrew wasn't who he said he was, Roland's phone had a custom-built locator inhibitor installed, so the man wouldn't be able to use it to track him, should things turn sour. Roland would have been able to remotely do the job in a matter of minutes, but there was too much at stake. He needed Andrew so he could show the man this warehouse and inform him about the group of people boating over to the bulk carrier. Roland jammed the binoculars over his eyes and saw the boat begin to move. The guards were on it as well, but that didn't mean there weren't more inside. It was time to go. With any luck, Andrew was already on his way. He was about to gather his meager belongings when a twig snapped behind him. A thousand thoughts flashed through his mind, but it settled on one. Protect yourself. His hand snaked into his pack and he felt the cold steel of his pistol. He'd used it already, just yesterday, but hated the idea of using it again. He rolled to the side and hid the gun behind him as he stood up.
Stop where you are,
the man's voice said. Roland still couldn't see his face, but he spotted the polished black military-issue boots, and the gruff voice told him this wasn't a Boy Scout looking for a badge. Roland made the decision quickly.
Thank God you're here. Some guys beat me up, stole my car, and left me here.
His gun was tucked in the back of his pants, and he held his head with both hands.
My head hurts. I threw up a few times, I think.
I said don't move. What are you doing here?
The man stepped into view, and Roland froze. He was big, and his gun even more so.
I told you. They hit me with a bat.
Roland waited until the gun was lowering, the man's face confused, and he reached behind him and pulled the pistol, firing it with a wavering hand. The first shot missed, but the second and third rang true. The man stayed there for a moment, blood pooling in his chest. The semi-automatic weapon fell to the forest floor with a soft thud, and the man's eyes went wide and glassy. It all happened in slow motion for Roland, but he was already grabbing his pack. He was about to run when he crossed the short distance to the man's side. The soldier appeared to think Roland was going to help him, but he didn't. He took the AR-15 and left the man alone on the cold, dew-covered grass as he took his last breath. Roland's hands shook as he ran for the truck, and he found a pill bottle in his jacket pocket. He choked two of them down as he approached the stolen vehicle. The engine started fine, and he was about to maneuver the side roads when his phone alerted him of another message. It was from the ex-Marine.
Be there tonight.
Roland headed away from the warehouse. Images of the guards covering people with AR-15s aboard big Zodiacs mixed with the glazing eyes of the alarmed soldier he'd shot as he drove inland. 19. Andrew, 4 days left. Andrew woke up that morning to his phone dinging with a reply from Digital Wizard asking to meet in Cape Town, California. It took him a minute to find the place with a Google search. He was in the middle of nowhere, but maybe that was best, considering that all of the populated areas along the coast had been relegated to thieves and psychos. He departed San Diego and Seth's motel at first light. Amazingly, Seth had kept to his word and given Andrew his gun back.
I wish you all the best, brother, and I hope you find your daughter, Seth said.
Thanks, Andrew replied. I hope you're right about this doomsday shit all being a hoax.
Seth shrugged.
Well, if not, I'm going to get one hell of a show. Fair trade.
Andrew smiled and left Seth on that note. The route to Cape Town took him back up through L.A. and from there to San Francisco. He saw people on the road and a few on the streets in both cities, but made sure to keep his distance. 3 times he had to stop to fill up with gas, relieve himself, and stock up on snacks and drinks. But each time he picked a gas station in an abandoned town. The cities were too dangerous to stop in, or even to slow down when driving through. The last thing he needed was for someone to steal his truck. Andrew spent the long hours of the drive north alternating between listening to his old CDs of Metallica and the static on the radio. Every now and then he'd catch snippets of doom and gloom from some amateur radio announcer, or of emergency broadcasts on repeat telling people to evacuate and to where. At last, more than 12 hours later, he was racing down a winding two-lane country road lined with dark walls of trees and the dying rays of sunlight flickering through them. According to the green highway signs along the way, he was getting close to a place called Fortuna, but no signs made any mention of Cape Town. The only way he even knew it existed was thanks to Google and the GPS app on his phone. Half an hour later, the sun was gone, and darkness swallowed the world. A glow of light on the horizon appeared soon after that, signaling a return to civilization. A wooden sign saying, "Welcome to Fortuna," flashed by, and then Andrew found himself studying the darkened windows of abandoned shops and homes as they scrolled by to either side. This was Fortuna. The glow he'd seen on the horizon was just the streetlights. It was a ghost town, but at least there didn't appear to be any psychos or vagrants hanging around. The town was there and gone in a matter of minutes, and then the shadowy trees and open fields of the country were back. On the other side of the town, the road signs began counting down to the next one, Ferndale, and soon he was driving through it, too. A computerized voice from the GPS interrupted his concentration.
"In half a mile, turn left on Route 211.
Half a mile later, it said,
"Turn left on Route 211.
He did what the app told him and raced across a two-lane bridge over the rippled, moonlit waters of a broad river below. On the other side, a patchwork of farmers' fields shone silver with the moon. The actual town of Ferndale came next. Once again, it was just a small town and utterly abandoned. Andrew felt exposed driving out here in the middle of nowhere, all by himself. He kept glancing in the rearview mirror, checking for headlights, but he wasn't sure what would be worse, seeing someone else on the road with him, maybe following him, or more of the same desolate isolation that had blanketed everything since he'd left San Francisco. Andrew followed more directions from the GPS, telling him to turn left onto Wildcat Avenue. He could see, from the sheer lack of illumination, that this was the end of Ferndale. Dark walls of trees soared on both sides of the road, and he was forced to slow down because of all the sharp corners. Glancing at the GPS app, he saw that he was a little over 20 miles away from Cape Town, wherever it was. He still hadn't seen a single road sign for it. Sparing a hand from the wheel, Andrew grabbed his phone and tapped out a message to Digital Wizard. 20 miles out, where to meet? Roland. Roland's body was pressed firmly against the motel room door. He felt every grain of the old wooden slab as he sat there wondering what to do next. They might have caught footage of him killing the soldier. Perhaps a drone had tracked his movements here. Roland was adamant that every passing second would be his last, but they ticked away and minutes turned to hours. His mind reeled with everything he'd seen, and theories juggled around his hectic thoughts all afternoon. Was Lewis Hound bringing those people to a private island to do genetic testing on them? Could he be a modern Dr. Moreau attempting to find a way for humanity to live in a world covered in ash and toxic fog? Skin that could withstand acid rain and lungs that could breathe in the harmful chemicals and poisons being unleashed by the bowels of the planet? Then he'd switch to thinking Hound was a humanitarian, selecting a group of people to save based on compatibility for the repopulation of the world. Had other countries experienced the same missing people over the last few weeks? He'd done some digging, but the results were unclear. Europe had seen signs of the coming catastrophes earlier than the others. Africa had been under a drought for ages. in addition to the fog rolling in along the coasts. Only Canada seemed to have any articles about people disappearing, and even then, it wasn't many. Roland considered the various components Hound had ordered on all of those shipping manifests he had gathered over months. So many high-tech gadgets and parts. Roland's blood turned cold. Underwater. Hound had to be building it underwater. He'd thought about that in passing before, but hadn't given it enough credibility. Now he felt certain. It could also be a huge boat, one capable of withstanding the elements, and they'd be mobile when the oceans overtook the Earth. An ark. Roland was convinced he was onto something. He opened his laptop, accessing NASA's system by using an untraceable military-level access portal. He linked to their satellite images of the Pacific coast and zoomed into Cape Town. The warehouse wasn't visible on the feeds. That was impossible. Roland had seen it with his own eyes, hadn't he? For a brief moment, he questioned himself. There were times he'd seen things that weren't there. That was why his grandmother had him take the pills. But was this one of those hallucinations?
You saw it, Raleigh. I believe you, he told himself, now pacing the dingy room.
His legs bumped into the bed and he sat on the musky comforter.
You saw it, didn't you?
He closed his eyes and pictured the dying soldier. That had been real, right? He went back to the computer, plucking it from the floor, and kept moving the image, scanning for signs of anything in the miles beyond the coastline. He found a few blurry sections out in the middle of the ocean, but those could be anything, and weren't uncommon. He flagged them anyway, saved the data, and closed the laptop. His phone buzzed, and he dropped it to the bed as he raced to pull it out of his pocket. 20 miles out, where to meet? At least Andrew Miller was real. It relieved Roland to have proof he wasn't making this all up. There was something afoot after all. He wasn't going crazy.
You aren't crazy.
He repeated that a few times as he thought of his reply.
Diner on Matol.
Roland assumed the old diner would be closed, but he needed food and he didn't think the owners would mind someone borrowing their kitchen for the emergency meeting. He hoped the Marine liked grilled cheese, because it was his specialty. 20. Andrew, 3 days left.
Diner on Matol.
Andrew wasn't sure what to make of that reply until he noticed that he was actually driving down a road called Matol. Somewhere along the way, Wildcat Avenue had become Matol Road, and he hadn't noticed.
So where's the diner?
Andrew wondered aloud as he scanned the black walls of trees. He careened through two more hairpin bends, and then he saw it, cresting above the treetops. Papa's Diner. The sign was illuminated by a trio of oversized vintage light bulbs. The trees cleared, and the parking lot rolled out beside him. He flicked off the headlights and drove in. A big, gleaming blue truck sat out front, a Ford hybrid. The lights were on inside the diner, and Andrew saw someone moving around in there. He rolled to a stop a dozen feet away from the back of the other truck, suddenly wondering if this was some kind of trap. He didn't know Digital Wizard. What if he was a psycho luring him out here to the middle of nowhere for his own twisted ends? But that seemed like a lot of trouble to go to for nothing. Andrew wasn't anyone special, and he didn't have access to any resources that could help anyone through the coming storm. All he had was his truck, his phone, his gun, the two maxed-out credit cards he'd been using to refill his tank with gas, and about $60 in his wallet.
Stop being paranoid,
Andrew muttered to himself. Val was counting on him. He parked beside the blue truck, grabbed his gun from the storage compartment in his side door, and, almost as an afterthought, grabbed David Wilkes's laptop and phone. Swinging his door open, he slipped the gun behind his back into the waistband of his jeans and strolled casually up to the glass door of the diner. A bell jingled as he opened the door, and a skinny kid with a patchy beard and a Giants baseball cap looked up from behind the serving counter. Shaggy brown hair cascaded from his cap almost to his shoulders, and his clothes were at least two sizes too big.
"Digital wizard?" Andrew asked from the entrance. He kept one hand dangling close to his side in case he had to reach for his gun.
A massive grin curved the kid's lips, and his dark eyes lit up with something bordering on manic glee.
"Hey, man. Andrew Miller, right?"
"How do you know my name?"
Andrew hadn't given it in their correspondence, only the short version of his name, Andy.
"I have my ways. They don't call me the wizard for nothing. You hungry? All I have is grilled cheese."
"Yeah, I could eat."
"Good. Pick a booth. I'll bring it over. You want Coke or root beer?"
Whatever you're having," Andrew said.
"Coke it is."
Andrew's gaze never left the kid as he headed for a booth with clear sight lines on both the serving counter and the front door. He set David Wilkes's laptop and phone on the table and eased the gun out from behind him. He left it on the bench beside him, shielded from view by the table and his legs. Digital Wizard darted out of the kitchen a few minutes later, carrying a tray with two sodas in vintage glass bottles and two plates with blackened grilled cheese sandwiches piled high.
"Sorry if it's a bit black," the kid said. Andrew shrugged.
"Thanks," he said, as the kid put a plate and a glass in front of him.
"So, we meet,"
Wizard said, grabbing a sandwich and munching on it absently.
"I was wondering if you'd actually show. Lots of shit happening out there."
"I know how to look after myself," Andrew said.
"Yeah."
There was that manic gleam in his eyes again.
"I bet you do,"
he said around a mouthful of grilled cheese. Andrew inclined his head to the laptop and phone on the table.
"Can you help me access these?"
He didn't reach for a sandwich. He was starving, but he needed to keep his hands free, just in case this kid turned out to be as crazy as he looked.
"Yeah, sure, but how are you going to pay me, man?"
"With money," Andrew suggested.
"No, no, that's no good. I have money. I need something else. I need..."
The kid trailed off as if even he didn't know the answer to that.
"I need to get to the bottom of this. We've got less than a week, man. You have any skills? Anything I could use?"
"I don't know. Maybe."
Andrew didn't like the idea of repaying favors with favors, but he didn't have much choice. Besides, no one was forcing him to repay anything. If it came to it, he could cut and run.
"I used to be a Marine, did a tour in Afghanistan. Since then, I've worked at a car shop in L.A.
"Marine, huh?"
Wizard munched on another sandwich, nodding to himself.
"Yeah, that checks out with what I found. So you're offering to be my muscle if I need it?"
Andrew said nothing to that for a long moment.
"Maybe, if you can do what you say you can."
Wizard squinted at the laptop, then dragged it over and flipped it open. He studied the lock screen for a second, not touching the keys.
"Windows," he said. "That's good."
Without another word, he slid out of the booth and ran over to another one. Andrew's hand landed on his gun, alarmed by the sudden movement.
"Where are you going?" he asked.
"Gotta get my kit together."
Wizard stopped and bent to retrieve an overloaded laptop bag from the floor under one of the booths closest to the door. He came back with his shoulder drooping under the weight of the bag and slid in across from Andrew. He paused dramatically to rub his hands together and flex his knuckles.
"Let's do it,"
he said with another giant grin. Then he withdrew a thumb drive from his bag and stuck it into the side of Wilkes's laptop. Andrew listened to him tapping keys on the laptop for a minute, and then a beep sounded as the computer rebooted.
"Got it,"
Wizard said, turning the laptop around to face him. Now it was showing David Wilkes's cluttered desktop.
"That fast?" Andrew asked.
"I'm no noob at this."
Andrew scanned the desktop, not finding anything to catch his eye at first glance. Then he pulled up a browser. No internet.
"Do you think this place still has Wi-Fi?" he asked.
"Does this look like the kind of place that has Wi-Fi?"
Wizard countered.
"No, I guess not."
"Shit."
"You have a phone?"
Wizard asked.
"Yeah, why?"
"Does it have a signal?"
Andrew checked. 3 bars.
Then use a hotspot.
A what? Wizard snorted and dragged the laptop back over. He produced a cell phone of his own from one of his jeans pockets, and his chin dipped to his lap as he configured it. Some more configuring on the laptop, and about a minute later he turned the laptop around again and said,
"All set."
"Thanks." Andrew checked the browser history first. He saw Gmail there and clicked it. It loaded up in seconds, still logged in. He started scanning the list of emails.
"You said you're looking for your daughter?"
Wizard said.
"How does breaking into this laptop help with that? Is it hers?"
"Something like that." Andrew's eyes fixed on an email with an interesting subject. Lost Coast Loading Zone. He opened it, but it was only a string of numbers. He shook his head, confused.
"I don't understand. What the hell is this?"
"Can I see?"
Wizard asked.
"Sure."
Andrew passed the laptop back, and the kid spent a few seconds studying the screen.
"Holy crap, man! Lost Coast Loading Zone, that's right around the corner from here. Might even explain what I saw. This has to be related."
"Related to what?" Andrew asked. Wizard began rambling about a billionaire and a paper trail, a contact that he had called Pied Piper 19, some giant construction project in the area, and a container ship that he'd spotted earlier. He was talking fast, barely making sense, jumping rapidly from one topic to another. Andrew was getting frustrated.
"What does this have to do with anything? This laptop belonged to a man who might have abducted my daughter. I need to know where he took her. I don't care about billionaires and whatever the hell they do with their money."
"That's what I'm trying to tell you, man. This is it. This is what it's all about. That billionaire is abducting people and taking them to some kind of safe house. He's building a bunker or a colony or something off the coast to survive the apocalypse. I saw them marching people out to that freight liner, as in abductees. And this email? The numbers in it are coordinates. They line up with the warehouse where the Freightliner showed up. We find out where that ship is headed, and we'll find your daughter."
Andrew stared at the kid for several seconds, too shocked to say a word.
"Show me the warehouse."
A shaky grin sprang to his lips, but faded just as fast. He scratched at his scraggly beard.
"It's guarded. You have a gun?"
Andrew's fist closed around his P320, and he slapped it on the table between them. The kid's eyes flew wide, and then his grin returned.
"I knew you wouldn't let me down. I have a gun, too."
He patted his bulky jacket, eliciting a suspicious clatter that might have been the slide on a pistol. Andrew's eyes collapsed into slits. What was this kid after? What was his motive? He was tempted to ask, but he wasn't sure he'd get a straight answer. Maybe Wizard knew someone who'd been abducted too, or maybe he was hoping to sneak into that billionaire's refuge before it was too late. Andrew hoped for one of those possibilities because the alternative was that he was about to walk into a trap. He decided to keep an eye on the kid until he learned more. No sense getting betrayed after coming this far.
"We can each take our own vehicles," Andrew said. "You lead, I'll follow."
"Oh, yeah, for sure,"
Wizard said, nodding agreeably.
"Thing is, I'm shagged. I was thinking we could go in the morning. If you want, you can come to my motel."
Andrew scowled. He didn't want to delay any longer than he had to.
"We should go now."
"You don't have any night vision gear, do you?"
"No."
"Because the guards at the warehouse do. One of them almost fragged me when I was there before. It'll be safer if we check it out in the morning."
"At dawn," Andrew growled.
"Sure."
Wizard's gaze tracked to the plate of grilled cheese in front of Andrew.
"You not gonna eat those?"
"I'll take it to go,"
Andrew said as he stood up from the table. Wizard stood up next and led the way to the door. Andrew carried the plate of grilled cheese out with him, making sure to keep the kid ahead of him at all times. 21. Kendra. 3 days left. The drive was long and arduous. On any given autumn day, it would have taken about 13 hours plus pit stops, but with the recent events, it was closer to 17. Twice, she'd arrived at blocked intersections too congested with damaged vehicles to maneuver around. There was no one left to clear the roads, so they sat like that, and probably would forever, if the predictions were accurate. Kendra had listened to the radio for a while, but there were no active FM stations broadcasting, so she was relying on the antiquated AM networks that had become a rarity with modern technology. The news came in fuzzy and unclear, but she was able to make out enough to understand that things were escalating. It appeared that the government had attempted to use some new technology inside the Yellowstone volcano after a Japanese firm claimed it worked on one of their 40 active spots. It turned out the statement was fabricated by their government to give false hope to a doomed nation, and they'd wasted a few days throwing this vibration inhibitor, as they called it, into the gaping maw of the beast. A war had broken out between Russia and anyone willing to stand against them as they fortified themselves for the coming epidemic. And China had been eerily quiet throughout the last 2 days, going radio and internet silent. There was ample speculation about this, and Kendra turned the station off as the talking heads made random conjectures on the subject. She knew none of them provided answers. They were all grasping at straws, but what did it matter? If the world was going to end, worrying about other nations was the least of their concerns. Kendra wanted to shout at them to go to their families and hug their children. They should be spending every moment they could with their loved ones, because that was all they had left. The thought made her think about her own parents, her father's disappointment at her joining the FBI and throwing a career in finance out the window, and her mother's sad, vacant eyes. Every time she visited, Kendra knew her mother was seeing Carrie. And when she realized it wasn't her firstborn, she'd leave the room, crying. It was too much to take. Even now, with the threat of the world ending, she couldn't bring herself to call them. It had been too long. Or had it? It was late, after midnight. Kendra had heard of cell service disintegrating around the nation, but she thought it was worth a shot. She'd overcome a lot in her life, and more so over the last several days, even killing two men. But somehow, her hands shook more now as she pulled to the side of the road and checked the GPS. The Silverado that was over an hour ahead of her had finally parked. She wondered if that was his ultimate destination, or if he was only braking for the night. Kendra opened her door, sticking her legs out straight, stretching the cramping muscles. She stood up, walking down the road for 10 yards while searching for her parents' number in her directory. When she didn't find their house number, she realized she'd switched phones 3 years ago and had failed to upload a lot of her previous contacts. There was just one number she'd held on to, and she found it under Mom's cell. She'd only called it once and had hung up before anyone answered. Her mom didn't have her unlisted number, so she couldn't reach Kendra, even if she wanted to. Kendra didn't expect her to have even noticed. She closed her eyes and inhaled the scent of early morning country air. She was farther north than she'd ever traveled in the state, and was almost surprised by all the hills and cliffs surrounded by endless trees. It was hard to imagine the looming catastrophe had the potential to end all of this beauty. What was going to be left of their society in a few days? Once inside the car, she dialed the number, the call ringing through her speakers via Bluetooth.
"Hello?"
a voice said.
"Mom, it's me."
Kendra's voice was small, childlike.
"Carrie?"
her mom asked, and Kendra fought to keep the tears away. She wiped her wet cheeks.
"No, Mom, it's Kendra." "Kendra, where have you been? I tried to call you. I tried to contact you, but the FBI numbers I found all went to voicemail. Are you all right?"
her mom asked. She'd tried to track her down. Maybe all wasn't lost.
"Mom, are you and Dad okay?"
she asked.
"We're fine, dear." "Where are you?"
"Home."
"Why didn't you go to Texas? It's not safe at home," she said.
"Kendra, you don't really believe all this, do you?"
she asked.
"I didn't, but I do now,"
Kendra admitted, partly for her own benefit.
Her mom's voice rose an octave.
Wake up, Harold! Kendra says this is all real. What do we do?
Kendra sighed and tried to clear her head.
Jump in your car and head for Texas. Go to the Houston field office. I'll text you a contact's name.
She'd give them her partner's name. Even though Peter Costello was a jerk, he wouldn't be able to turn Kendra's parents away.
Okay, will you be there?
She could hear her dad prompting questions from beside her mom and could almost picture the two of them lying in bed, disheveled and panicked. Why had she waited so long to reach out to them?
I'm going to try, Kendra told them. Where are you?
California.
Why? You should have left days ago. The entire Atlantic and Pacific coasts have been evacuated,
her mom said in a rush.
I know. I'm on a case.
A case?
Mom, take care of Dad and make sure you get to Houston. Does Dad still have a rifle?
She asked.
Harold, where's the gun?
She mumbled through the speaker.
It's in the garage, dear. Bring it.
You're now living in a dangerous world,
Kendra said. Her tears were dried up and she felt the need to keep moving toward her GPS target.
We won't have to shoot anyone, will we?
Her mom asked.
Mom, just be careful.
I'm texting you the details. Go now, while it's still dark out.
Honey, you have no idea how nice it is to hear from you.
Her mom's voice was small again.
I love you, Mom. Tell Dad I love him, too.
We love you, too, Kendra.
We always have,
her mom said, and Kendra ended the call, unable to continue talking. It would only make her want to turn around and head to Texas, but she was close to solving this case, and she knew it. With deft movements, she sent the address and Peter's number to her mom and threw the car in drive, leaving the radio off. She rolled the passenger window open a crack and let the fresh air flow through the car. She drove the rest of the way in silence, finally exiting off the Redwood Highway around 1:30 in the morning. Her gas tank was nearly empty, and she'd already used up the 2 jerry cans of fuel in her trunk. Instead of heading straight for the blinking light on her GPS application, she pulled over to a gas station after passing a beat-up truck a mile or so down the road. Even in the dimly lit night sky, she could make out the body lying on the gravel lot. She parked beside the fuel pumps with her lights aiming toward the person. His white shirt was hard with dried blood. She didn't need to check if he was alive. Kendra noted the glass door had been shattered, and she didn't want to find out if anyone was inside waiting for her. She prepaid for the fuel, relieved she'd remembered her wallet. It was funny how quickly things like credit cards became arbitrary pieces of plastic. Lucky for her, she was still carrying it. She injected the gas as fast as she could, grateful the pumps were still running. Her gun didn't leave her holster, but she was fully aware how close it was at hand, confident she'd win a duel on the gravel lot if it came to it. Kendra shoved the nozzle back and hurried into her car, turning around to reconnect with Matole Road. Eventually, she arrived at a place called Papa's Diner. She cut her lights and parked out of sight on the edge of the road. She killed the engine, but was ready to fire it up and tear out of here if necessary. When she was certain no one could see her car from the diner, she grabbed her binoculars and scanned the area. Exactly where her GPS showed it, there was the Silverado, parked beside another truck, this one slightly newer and larger. It was hard to make out the color in the dark, but she thought it might be blue. The sign to the diner was still on. 3 of 6 vintage light bulbs glowed against it, barely illuminating the name of the establishment. She saw movement from the corner of her eye and adjusted the view to see a young man inside. He might have been a teenager, or at least in his early 20s, judging by the patchy beard. He was wearing an apron, and he emerged from the kitchen holding 2 plates of food. He passed one to the other man. It was Andrew Miller, the man she'd been following, the one searching for Valeria Miller. She was absolutely positive he'd been the one to shoot Mr. Tesla, or David Wilkes, as she now knew the kidnapper to be. Miller's eyes were intense, even from here, and he was flipping a coin over his knuckles. He accepted the plate of food, and Kendra watched as he showed more interest in his laptop than what was on his plate. He turned it to face the kid, and he typed away at the keyboard with half a sandwich between his teeth. A minute later, the laptop was sliding back across the table to Andrew. The older man's eyes widened with shock.
It has to be his computer,
she said, feeling so close to the end of the ride. If that was Wilkes's laptop, they had whatever answers it contained. She contemplated storming inside, exposing their clandestine meeting, but there were too many variables that could go wrong if Andrew really was involved. Her chances were stronger if she stayed in the shadows, following along until she couldn't any longer. This way, she kept the upper hand. A few minutes later, the duo was leaving the diner. The younger man flicked the lights off as they exited and each man got into his respective truck. Kendra's heart raced as she thought about where they might be going. Would they lead her to the missing people now? She really wished she had a cup of coffee and briefly considered using the diner to brew a pot. As the truck's engines fired up, their headlights cascaded over the road, slowly disappearing in the distance. Kendra hit the ignition button for her car and put it into drive, making sure she stayed a mile or two behind. 22. Andrew, 3 days left. The motel where the kid was staying turned out to be up the road in the last ghost town that Andrew could remember driving through, Fernsdale. It was a scenic little town, and the motel was abandoned. Wizard had already taken the liberty of breaking into the front office and stealing a room key for himself, which meant that he'd been staying here for a while already. Now he led Andrew back through the open door where he'd broken a pane of glass to let himself in. He gestured grandly to the place as if he owned it and then walked around the front desk.
"Would you like a room, sir?
Just give me a key."
"Sure thing. Will you be paying with cash or credit, Mr. Miller?"
Andrew scowled at him, glaring death. Wizard sighed.
No sense of humor.
He turned and grabbed a random key off a decoratively carved and painted key rack in the shape of a redwood forest. Then handed the key to Andrew.
You can have the room next to mine.
Thanks. Andrew snatched it away and began to leave.
Good night. Jeez.
Andrew regarded the kid steadily. A thought had belatedly occurred to him.
You take off without me and I'll hunt you down.
Uh-huh. You know that makes me want to take off without you, right?
That wouldn't be smart.
Are you threatening me?
Are you planning to leave?
Well, no.
Then you don't have to worry about it. Sleep tight.
Andrew banged on the door to the wizard's room with his fist.
Time to go.
He heard footsteps, then the door swung wide and the kid appeared, rubbing his eyes.
What's going on?
He peered around Andrew's shoulder to catch a glimpse of the sky.
It's not even light out.
It will be soon. Grab your things and let's go.
The wizard frowned and squinted bleary eyes at Andrew. He gave in with a sigh.
Fine. Give me a sec.
Andrew averted his gaze from the open door and tapped his foot impatiently, staring up at the charcoal sky. There was a bite to the air, something bitter. The door banged shut, and Andrew turned to see the kid in a black hoodie, a cream-filled chocolate packet pastry dangling from his mouth.
You have your gun? Andrew asked.
Wizard chomped off half the pastry and spoke through a hail of chocolatey crumbs.
Yeah, man. You?
Andrew patted the inside pocket of his denim jacket. Wizard nodded as they crossed the parking lot to their trucks. Andrew fished the keys from his jeans pocket and noticed the kid doing the same.
Maybe we should take one vehicle, he suggested.
Why?
Because if that warehouse you found is guarded, two trucks will make more noise than one. And because I need you close to give me directions, we're not going to drive up to the place. We'll have to pull off to the side of the road long before we reach it.
You think I'm an idiot who's going to blow our cover?
Wizard guessed. Andrew shrugged. That, and he didn't fully trust this kid, so he wanted to keep him close.
Fine, we'll take my truck.
Try again, Andrew said, rounding the tailgate of the kid's F-150 to reach his old Silverado.
How come you're calling the shots?
Because it's my daughter who was abducted. And if we screw this up, she's the one who pays the price.
Andrew stopped beside the driver's side door.
You have someone who went missing?
No, but...
So what are you doing out here?
Andrew kept his hands loose at his sides,
his mind already running through all the different ways to incapacitate this kid before he could reach for his gun.
Well, I mean...
Wizard's brow furrowed. He scratched his jaw as he thought about it, as if not even he was certain what he was doing.
I guess I'm suspicious of this Lewis Hound guy. I mean, what's his deal? Abducting people? Building a refuge?
Yeah, but what's it to you?
I always hated those elitist clubs I couldn't get into. The frats, the jocks, drama club.
You couldn't get into drama club? You seem like a natural. Wizard squinted at him as if he couldn't decide whether Andrew was being serious or not.
Yeah, well, I want into this one. And a couple of goons came to my house with guns, so they made it personal.
Really? Wizard popped the last of the pastry into his mouth and nodded silently. Well, you've got your nose in the game, but my blood is in it, so we do this my way. Understood? Wizard shrugged.
Sure, man. You have the combat experience anyway. I just like my truck better.
Andrew snorted and shook his head. Get in.
All right, we're close, Wizard said.
How close?
Another mile and we'll come to the bend in the road where I pulled off last time I was here.
Andrew spied an opening between the redwoods on the right, big enough to fit his truck. He hit the brakes and pulled off into it, bouncing over the bumpy terrain and flattening a few ferns along the way.
Hey, you can pull up a little closer, Wizard said.
You said some guys jumped you the last time you were here.
Yeah.
So we have to be more careful this time. Can't use the same approach. We'll hike in from here. Andrew killed the engine and they exited the vehicle. Wizard slammed his door with a resounding bang and Andrew scowled.
Quiet, he hissed. Sorry.
The kid came crunching noisily through a bed of dry pine needles as he walked around the front of the truck. Andrew stared pointedly at the kid's feet. No wonder they caught you last time. You're as loud as an elephant.
Dude, we're a mile away from where I hiked in the last time. That puts us like 3 miles from the warehouse. There's no one out here to hear us.
You keep thinking like that and we'll be dead. This is my op, remember?
Yes, sir, Sergeant Miller, sir.
Wizard quipped in a whiny voice. Andrew smirked. I was a corporal, but thanks for the promotion. They entered the forest on the right side of the road and began hiking in, with Wizard pointing the way. The rising sun pooled crimson in the sky, and tendrils of mist snaked along the forest floor. That bitter edge to the air was intensifying. At first, Andrew thought it might be the forest, but then his head began to feel light, and he started feeling sick to his stomach.
There's something wrong with the air.
Andrew glanced at Wizard to see him holding the collar of his hoodie over his mouth and nose.
It's all in your head,
Andrew said.
No, man, I feel like I want to faint and throw up.
Hard to throw up when you're unconscious,
Andrew pointed out.
You know what I mean.
Quiet! It's probably just that 100-year-old Twinkie you ate,
Andrew said.
It was a ding-dong.
Whatever!
I think this is an acid fog. That shit's toxic. It killed a bunch of people in Africa.
Good thing we're not in Africa, then. How much farther?
1/2 mile to the lookout, maybe? We should go back. We'll find some respirators or something.
You know where to find respirators?
No, but
then we push on, Andrew growled. And keep your yap shut. 1/2 mile is close enough for our voices to carry.
Before long, they came to a clearing at the edge of a cliff overlooking the coast. They both pulled out their guns and crept up to the cliff's edge, flattening themselves in the long yellow grass. It was still wet with dew. The fog was thick as cotton below, rolling in from the ocean like a tsunami. Wizard pointed to a faint rectangular silhouette, hazy with the fog, just barely visible along the coast.
There, he whispered. That's the warehouse.
Judging by the outlines of the structures that Andrew saw, the warehouse was actually a massive complex, ringed with chain-link fences and barbed wire. As if that wasn't enough, Andrew could see drones buzzing around above it all. He followed the hovering machines with his eyes and saw them flying out over the ocean. That was when he noticed the outline of a container ship out toward the horizon. There were maybe 12 people standing around on the deck.
Andrew glanced back at Wizard to see that the kid had produced a pair of binoculars from his hoodie.
Give me those,
Andrew snapped, and ripped them away before the kid could object.
Hey, quiet,
Andrew added as he peered through the eyepieces at the container ship. The people on the deck were all carrying rifles and wearing masks. Maybe the air was toxic, after all. He grimaced and turned his attention to the warehouse. There wasn't anyone left guarding the fence. We need to get down there and see if they left anything behind that might tell us where they're going.
Yeah,
Wizard coughed into his jacket and then spoke in a hoarse whisper.
It looks abandoned. We should go back to the truck and drive closer.
Andrew glanced around, then stood up and peered over the cliff, too steep to climb down.
Where were you the last time?
The kid pointed to another clearing along the cliff about 20 yards below their current position. It didn't look any easier to climb down from there.
All right, let's go. We'll see how close we can get.
Andrew's own voice was hoarse now, and he could feel his throat burning. The kid was right. This was an acid fog. They ran through the forest on the way back, trading stealth for speed. The burning in Andrew's throat and the dizzy, sick feeling spurred him on, but he had to stop frequently to give Wizard a chance to keep up.
I can't do this, man,
the kid gasped raggedly while leaning against a giant redwood.
I'm gonna faint. Just give me 5.
You want to die out here?
Wizard's face scrunched up pitifully.
No, but...
What's your name?
Bob Sponge.
I'm being serious.
Roland Martin.
Great. Now I know what to put on your tombstone.
What?
You're staying here, right? Good luck with that.
Andrew turned and jogged away. A few seconds later, he heard feet pounding the ground behind him, kicking pine needles.
You're a jerk,
Roland gasped,
and you're dead without me.
A few minutes later, Andrew spied the road and one of the taillights of his truck peeking out between a pair of giant redwoods. He aimed for that. Just as they were about to trade the forest floor for asphalt, Andrew heard something. A whisper at first, but growing steadily in pitch and volume. He swept an arm out in front of Roland to stop him and cocked an ear to the sound.
What is it?
The kid asked. Andrew placed a finger to his lips and peered up the road toward the noise. He caught a glimpse of a silver car and pulled Roland behind a tree. Andrew peered around the side of it. The car slowed as it approached his truck, then pulled off and stopped.
Shit,
Andrew thought. That spot had looked like a better hiding place at dawn than it did now in the light of day. A second later, a white van came screaming down the road toward the car and skidded to a stop beside it. The passenger side door flew open, and a man in camo fatigues and a spray painter's mask jumped out, aiming a Glock around his door at the driver's side of the silver car.
Get out of the vehicle,
the man yelled, his voice muffled by the mask. 23. Kendra, 3 days left. Kendra's eyes blinked open, and she instantly regretted her sleeping arrangements. Her back ached, her temples throbbing as she lifted the driver's seat into an upright position. She'd passed the motel the trucks had stopped at a few hours ago and had circled over to a nestled spot leading to an acreage down the street. Outside was foggy, dense like pea soup. She checked the time. It was after 9 a.m, and she jumped in astonishment, hitting her head on the car's ceiling.
Stupid, stupid Kendra,
she chided herself. She'd been so exhausted she'd slept right through the GPS movement notifications. It chimed again, and she activated the app. The truck was 20 miles away, right beside the coastline. That's where they were. They had to be. She popped her glove box open, discovering a bottle of caffeine pills, and with practiced efficiency, she tossed 2 in her mouth and swigged from her water. She hoped it helped with the headache, and since the truck wasn't moving, she drove to the motel, finding one vehicle still there. She watched for a few minutes, witnessing no movement inside, and she pulled her gun, testing the handle to the room the younger man had been sleeping in. It was unlocked, and the room appeared empty. It didn't look like he was planning on returning. She gave herself 2 minutes to use the bathroom and tried to clean herself up. Her eyes were red and puffy, and she brushed her hair with her hands, pulling it into a fresh ponytail. Satisfied, Kendra returned to the car and saw the truck still hadn't left. That was a good sign. She reached for her cell phone, trying to think who she could call for backup. There was no one. The police hadn't cared about any of the cases, and the FBI had closed up shop, leaving her high and dry. This was a solo mission. At first, she thought the mist outside was fog, but at this point she wasn't so sure. It had a different quality to it, a sour taste in the middle of her throat. It had to be a version of the toxic fog she kept hearing about. If it had spread to California already, things were progressing faster than expected. She slammed her vents shut and killed the fan blowing air from outside. As she headed for the coast, moving west, the fog grew thicker, making visibility on the winding side roads nearly non-existent. She tried to brake lightly but came to a sharp corner, not seeing the yellow arrow sign until it was too late. She let out a scream as the car skidded off the road and into a metal guardrail, stopping her from falling over a 10-foot drop. A strand of hair fell in Kendra's eyes, and her chest heaved as adrenaline coursed through her veins.
You're okay. You're okay.
She managed to back away from the edge enough to open her door with a clunk, and she climbed out, seeing her front driver's side tire was punctured. The car tilted toward the ground on that side. Just what she needed. And only 3 miles or so from catching up to the Silverado and Andrew Miller. Kendra went through the motions of changing the tire. She jacked up the frame, loosened the lug nuts, and when it came to tugging the tire off, it didn't want to budge. Something was bent from the impact, and it took all her strength, a tire iron, and a few curse words to have it budge an inch before sliding all the way off. Kendra fell as inertia took over and the tire flopped to the ground with a thud. She cussed, dusted herself off, and placed the full-sized spare onto the car, replacing the nuts and lowering the jack all the way down. The whole event took about 20 minutes, and she hoped she hadn't missed her opportunity. She drove slower, the fog thick and heavy. She needed to find a respirator in case the fumes were too toxic, but for now, she wanted to find the Silverado, and hopefully the faces to go with the missing names in her file. The last few miles went by gradually, the car constantly pulling to the left. As she came around a corner, the elevations lowered and she maneuvered down the declining road. The fog lifted here a bit and she could finally see the ocean in the distance. The blinking light of the hidden GPS on the Silverado was close, a mile from the coast. She slowed, something catching her eye out in the water. Her stomach sank as